Anjali Kumar was a practical corporate lawyer for Google who found herself desperate for answers to questions that really didn't lend themselves to be Googled. Questions like, why are we here? What is the meaning of life? What happens when we die? In her new book, Stalking God, My Unorthodox Search for Something to Believe In, she writes about her quest to answer those very questions. She called God from a payphone in the middle of the desert at the Burning Man Festival. She had her aura cleared long distance by a virtual healer in Australia. She traveled to Brazil to meet with a man named John of God who performs healing rituals by channeling spiritual entities. And though the experiences were wild, sometimes even scary, what she found at the end was surprising, unifying, and stunning in its simplicity. Again, the name of the book is Stalking God, My Unorthodox Search for Something to Believe In. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Anjali Kumar to the roundtable this morning. Anjali, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
What brought you to this story?
Well, you know, it was a few years ago, the birth of my daughter. She's about to turn 8 at the end of February. But when she was born, I realized in a bit of a start that I had no idea what I really believed about religion and spirituality. I was raised with a variety of religious and spiritual traditions around me. I was raised Jain, but culturally Hindu, but then I also went to Catholic school, and I grew up in a very diverse suburb of Chicago, and so had a lot of different influences on my childhood and upbringing, and was always pretty open-minded about it, but never really thought about what I believed. And when my daughter Zia was born in 2010, I realized that not knowing how to answer those big questions was going to be a problem because she was going to one day ask me questions that I could not Google an answer to. And so that sent me off on a journey to figure out how to answer those questions, things like what happens when you die and how do you find happiness and is there a God?
And you, with this scattered, if you will, religious background and spiritual background, you were fine with all of it, but you never really connected. There was nothing there that you connected with.
Yeah, I think, you know, there wasn't one thing that connected for me. I think it was indeed the scatteredness of it was what was a bit confusing. And there are bits and pieces that resonated, but so much of it for me was cultural. And so I never felt the need to really explore it further or dive in deeper or reject it outright because it was such a part of my cultural upbringing and it was something that was comfortable on many levels. But then again, when it really came down to brass tacks of what I truly believed, I just wasn't finding the answer in one spiritual tradition versus another. And that's what kind of brought me onto this search.
So when it came to your daughter and deciding to go on the search, what was the first step?
The first step was talking to my very patient husband about taking a trip down to Brazil. So my daughter was about to turn 1 when I took this first trip to go see John of God, who is one of the opening chapters of the book, who is considered a full trance medium. And a lot of people believe that he can cure all kinds of illnesses and ailments, both emotional, physical, spiritual, whatever might ail you. And I was going to go down there. I was on the end of my maternity leave. I was working at Google at the time where I was an attorney, and I had a few weeks left of my maternity leave that I had to use before Zia turned 1. And my sister was heading down to Brazil, and so she mentioned that she was going to see this healer and invited me to come along with her. And so that's how it started, is I went down to Brazil. I used air miles to book a trip, and I crashed with my sister in her room and started exploring some of these sort of non-traditional spiritual traditions. And that was what, you know, where the idea was born for a book and kind of took off from there.
As you were doing it, did you know that eventually you'd write about it?
I didn't. I knew there was something there because I was so surprised by how many people were there from all walks of life, from all over the world, with a lot of need and really seeking, truly seeking. And when I came back from that trip, and especially at my office at Google, and I was telling people about where I'd been, and these are lawyers and engineers, and my husband's a doctor, so his doctor friends, you know, our community of people are like very rational sort of thinkers. And when I started telling them the stories about what I had seen when I was a John of God, they all had stories of their own. And I found it really fascinating that all these people that I think of as super rational and very scientific type people very well read and very intellectual, that they were all seeking, that they were all confused about these same sorts of questions, that there were, in fact, this body of questions that Google could not provide a satisfactory answer to, and that they were, you know, somewhat quietly and some more loudly doing their own searches. So that kind of that made me pull at the thread a little bit more and realize that I was onto something just for myself. And then as I kept exploring it, when I would tell people what I had done, it made for a really great cocktail party conversation, if nothing else. And, you know, my friends would laugh at the stories and the way I was telling them. And they were also curious. And I realized that that I was an interesting person to tell this kind of story because maybe I was an unexpected person to go on this kind of journey. And perhaps that's the point.
Did you find commonality with other people that were going on the journey? Because I got the sense in the book that it was a very disparate group of people that you met along the way who were also seeking.
Absolutely. I mean, everybody was so different that I met, but there was that core commonality that we all want those same things, you know, as I sort of set up into the conclusion of the book. And I don't necessarily want to give it away, but I'm happy to give it away to your readers of what the conclusion was. But we're ultimately all on a search, and we're all searching for the same three things, which is health, happiness, and love. And so I think at the end of the day, as different as we might all seem from each other and feel like we are, especially in these crazy times, I think if we can get back to those roots of what it really all comes down to, which is kind of a simplified version of basic human needs identified by social scientists like Abraham Maslow or Manfred Max Neef, that it really comes down to the same things for most of us.
You went on this journey, and it was wild, it was fun, it was joyful. It could also be a little scary.
Yes, yes, indeed. There were definitely times that I was pushed beyond my comfort zone. You know, I really tried to do things, and certainly the things that I reported back in the book were the things that I really gravitated to, so I didn't want any of my experiences to be things that I was so skeptical of that I wasn't being open-minded. You know, that the point of it was really to enter each of these things with a truly open mind. I think that's how I approach my career. It's how I've approached my life. I'm sort of becoming a professional, curious person, I suppose, you know, on some level. And there were definitely moments that were really uncomfortable. You know, things like Burning Man was really outside my comfort zone, not because it was scary per se, but just because some of the things that I experienced while there were just uncomfortable and really different from my day-to-day. And, you know, being alone by myself with a lot of people, but alone in my head at a silent meditation retreat for days, I was surprised how scary that was at times. You know, just really having to be quiet for 5 days, not speaking, not writing, not reading, not interacting with anyone, really, or in this noble silence sort of situation, and being alone with the thoughts in your head can be kind of a frightening place. And so things like that were uncomfortable. And, you know, luckily I got through it, and I'm on the other side of all those things, and I feel better for it.
Mm. You get the sense that in the book that one sort of naturally led to the other. One exploration naturally led to another exploration. Is that the case, or did that come through research of saying of almost a checklist?
Oh, it was definitely not a checklist. It was very much a natural exploration. It was things, you know, like the John of God thing led to the next thing, led to the next thing. It's somewhat chronological in the book. There might be one or two things that were sort of flipped just because the narrative worked better. But really, it's largely pretty true to the chronology of what I did. And it was just because something would spark something. You know, I would read about something and trip into something else, or I would have a conversation with somebody about the divine feminine, and it would come up 3 or 4 times, and then the next experience would sort of present itself. And I think, you know, it makes sense, given the topic of the book, that these things would unfold in somewhat of a natural way. But I think I was also, again, following my curiosity. So if I kept hearing about the divine feminine, I was like, okay, maybe there's something there for me to explore, because that's what's resonating for me, and it's something that is obviously, you know, tugging at me in some way. And so I would keep turning in that direction and sort of turning towards it, and then that would be the next experience or set of experiences, as the case may be, and then so on and so forth.
I just want to give an example of the beginning of a chapter, chapter 8 of the book, about halfway through. After I was gobsmacked by faith in Peru, where I found myself at the vortex of some type of otherworldly force, I came back to New York and found the city, unlike me, unchanged. I begin to wonder in reading those kind of passages from one experience to the other, when did you know you were done? When did you know that you had sort of figured out that you were at a place where you could move on to the next thing?
In terms of each experience, you know, it was because a lot of it was travel. So the experience sort of came to a natural conclusion, or something like the Vipassana retreat. So, you know, I was there for 5 days and it sort of came to a conclusion, and it would either resonate where I felt like I wanted to explore it more, or it would feel just like, okay, you know, I've gotten what I was meant to get out of this and pull that piece back into my heart and then move on to the next thing. In terms of what I was done with the material for the book, it was because I was on deadline, frankly. I don't think I'll ever be done with this search, you know. It's a lifelong search, and I don't know that I'll ever know the answers. If I did, I'd be Oprah. I mean, I just don't know the answers, so I don't know that I'll ever find them. I wish I did. But, you know, maybe there's a second in the series of books that'll continue the journey.
But you do feel you have better answers and detailed answers for your daughter.
I think I do, and I think what I mostly realize is that this journey wasn't really about her in the end. It was intended for her, and maybe her birth gave me the excuse to set off on a journey that I really needed to do for myself.
And the answers that you found, or at least the experiences that you had, they didn't solve the equation, although they did give you a background that you felt more comfortable with.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think one of the things that they led to was realizing that where I started out wasn't so bad to begin with, you know, that I had these sort of cultural moorings and religious moorings that were actually quite comfortable and did actually answer a lot of the questions that I had. And you know, one of the core principles of Jainism is something called non-absolutism, where, basically translates to the idea that not one person or group can have absolute knowledge of truth, absolute ownership over truth. And I think, you know, my search was very much rooted in that idea that, well, there's many sides to the elephant, there's many ways to describe an elephant, and all of those things would be true. They're just limited because of their perspective. And so gathering all these bits and pieces and these different perspectives gave me a little bit of a broader view of the elephant, but I still don't see the entire thing because there's so many different ways to look at it.
And that, and that really is what you get out of the book, of how many paths there are to explore.
Absolutely. I hope so.
The name of the book is Stalking God, My Unorthodox Search for Something to Believe In. The book is published by DeCapo. Anjali Kumar, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, Stalking God, My Unorthodox Search for Something to Believe In. It's published by Seal. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.